Hello and welcome to Care Insights with the Outstanding Society, the podcast channel created by the Outstanding Society to share and celebrate best practice whilst raising the profile of the social care sector. The Outstanding Society is a community interest company and membership is free to all, not just those who have achieved an outstanding rating. If you would like to join, please visit our website or follow the links in this episode. The Outstanding Society was thrilled to be back at the Care Show in October 2023, hosted at the NEC Birmingham, where we had the pleasure of presenting the Learning Lounge. The sessions held over the 2 days received impressive attendance. This recording features one of those insightful sessions. We eagerly anticipate meeting you all at the upcoming Care Show, taking place at the XL London on April the 24th and 25th. To secure your complimentary ticket, please visit www.careshowlondon.co.uk/TOS or simply click on the link in the episode details.
Hello everyone, so we're just going to talk about well-being and how really sickness impacts kind of everything that we do essentially. So whether you run a care home for older people, learning difficulties, home care, sickness is kind of very stressful, would you say? It's a lot of time, a lot of effort, and so we just want to have a discussion around that. Ruth and Leah will introduce themselves and where they're from as they speak. But Ruth, do you want to start off and start telling us a little bit about the importance of really managing a sickness and sometimes a sickness culture inside an organisation as well?
Thanks, Sam. I'm Ruth French. I'm the director of Stowe Healthcare. We've got 8 nursing and residential homes across East Anglia, and I am responsible, I guess, overall for around 600 staff. I think overall, you know, that this talk flows from so many things that we've been talking about over the last couple of days and the ways in which we can support our staff. And across the course of this session, hopefully we can give you some ideas to take back to your own services. But I guess from my perspective, and certainly recently I've been supporting one service that where we didn't have a manager for a few weeks. We were sort of in between appointments. And what was really striking to me on the first day of walking around that home was 2 or 3 staff coming up to me and saying, the biggest problem that we have at the moment in this home is staff phoning in sick at the last moment. And I absolutely understood their pain because I was taking on call for that home, and I was actually receiving calls from staff who were phoning in sick. And what I realised very quickly was we had developed a culture in that home of it being deemed as okay for staff to just be phoning in 10 minutes before their shift to say that they weren't able to come to work that day. There were not reviews happening, return to work meetings. Sickness was being recorded but not actioned in accordance with our policy. And I realised there were some really quick ways that we could improve absence in that home. And I guess what was really striking to me was within 2 weeks, I'd managed to reduce absence by 80%. And if you think about the impact of that, in terms of consistency of care to my residents, in terms of reduction of agency bills, and in terms of massive improvement to staff morale, because they actually had confidence that the people who were rotated on that day were going to be turning up, because then when they, you know, that they knew it was being dealt with. And I think actually there were some really simple steps that we could take there to drastically improve things in the home within a really short period of time. So that's been a really good learning experience for me. And some of those tools, you know, are things that we can talk about a little bit more in this session.
Thank you very much. And Leah, from your perspective, sickness, the drain that it can cause, but also as leaders, how we can support people as well. Do you want to just start talking about that?
Yeah, hi everybody. My name is Leah. I am the Chief People Officer for Berkeley Care. We have 12 homes supporting older people and people who live with dementia, really from the West Midlands down, and we have 1,000 or over 1,000 staff now. I think to answer your question in two parts, we all know, and I think we can all recognise that if we have a healthy and productive workforce, that can only impact positively upon our residents. So this idea of health and well-being and preventative well-being is really, really important. Absence really can affect all elements of the business. Obviously, Ruth talked about the quality aspect. From a personal perspective, linking it, I guess, more to health and well-being, if we are feeling well, we tend to feel better, we have more energy, we have greater resilience, and that positively impacts upon us and upon our colleagues and those that we work with. So where we don't have that, the opposite is also true. So it's really significant in terms of individuals, in terms of quality, but also from a commercial perspective, the cost, the absence, brings in, and the wider effect that that can have on team and team morale. So I think for me, when I think about health and well-being, you tend to think of physical, emotional, mental, social, financial health. These are all things that make up health. I think sometimes when we're looking at health and well-being and what can we do as leaders, there can be a tendency to have a top-down approach. So we know best. It's our job as employers to protect our staff and to enable their health and well-being. And so we might have initiatives, we might have policies, we might have information giving. That's all about giving to our staff. And for me, I think it's, from a leadership perspective, switching that around. So really looking at the relationship between an organisation and its employees, and thinking about what can we do to enable our team members to actually take control of their own health and well-being. I think that's really, really key from a leadership perspective.
Thank you. I think when we talk about sickness, I think initially we think, oh my God, I've got to cover that person. I think that's the first thing that comes into your head, isn't it, a lot of the time. And we kind of forget about the human being behind that, who is actually sick and unable to come into work, and there's a lot of other things going on. I think there's all different scenarios with sickness, isn't there? There's a lot of different reasons, there's a lot of different things happening in people's lives that drive a call to say, I'm sick and I can't come to work. Some of them we can anticipate, though. I think when we know that school starts, for example, somebody's starting school, often you might get calls at the beginning of September, as people calling in sick, whereas actually they just want to bring their kid to school. So we brought in a policy that if you're bringing your kid to school at the start of September, you can come in late. Come in, but come in after you bring your child to school, and if you need to collect it, we'll work through that too. And that actually meant that we don't have those people kind of go, oh, I can't go because I've got to do this, I've got to do that. So there's different ways that we can do that, isn't there? And there's I think we were talking about good cop, bad cop earlier, and there is a little bit of that in managing sickness. You do have to sometimes be really, really clear on what the policy is. You need to be really, really clear on what action you're going to take. In a previous role, I had a few care homes where sickness was through the roof, and actually it was a symptom of the culture in the care home. It wasn't actually people being sick, it was just people were sick of going to work, to be fair. And actually, when I walked into the care homes, I was kind of sick of being there too, so I couldn't really blame them, to be fair. It felt awful. So we have to do something different. And again, to you, Leah, they had the answers. They knew what they needed. We just had to listen to that. And rigid shift patterns is one of them that causes a lot of problems for people. Being rigid in the way that you work. We only work these shift patterns. You can only work within this time. that doesn't work for everybody. It really doesn't. And we have to be a bit more flexible as employers to be able to give people the opportunity to be brilliant in work, but also be the person they need to be outside of work. And so I think we need to think about that and not be so rigid. I think from a well-being perspective, we talked about coaching conversations with team members. Do you want to go into that a little bit more, Leah?
Yeah, so it fits in brilliantly to what you said, Samantha. Whenever we have absence, and if we want to truly manage absence and have brilliant attendance, we really need to have effective conversations with our teams around all of the issues that, that you've just spoken about. So I think there's kind of three aspects to this. The first one is that when you're having conversations about absence or attendance or ill health or ill well-being, whatever it may be, you don't need any special skills. You already have those skills by the nature of the jobs that you're doing. You need empathy. You need to be approachable. You need to be open and honest and willing to listen. Those kind of active listening skills, the skills you already have. I have many, many a time where somebody has come to me and said, you know, we've got this particular issue around absence or a difficult situation. I don't want to say something wrong. I don't want to make it worse. Actually, if you use those skills you've already got, there's very little that you can say that will make that worse. And actually, you're talking about how you're worried about feeling. So sometimes kind of reframing that's really important. And when it comes to having coaching conversations around absence, it's a slightly different way of thinking about it. So I think we've all got our standard return to work interviews, you know, those templates, those forms, those tick box exercises. What I would say is I'd really challenge all of us to think about powerful questions. Forget the form. Controversial, I know.
No, good.
Forget
I'll
the
like
form.
Go for
forget
it.
The tick box. Ask people. How are you feeling? What's happening for you right now? How are you experiencing this? What are you doing around your health? What can I do to help you? And all of a sudden, you've moved away from a very task-based, you know, why have you been off sick? Did you go to your doctor? Did you see a GP? And yes, those conversations sometimes are useful, but you're switching it around onto the person. And you're looking at them as an individual, you're listening to them, and actually you'll be really surprised about some of the answers you might get. A lot of the absence that we may get actually isn't the reason for the absence whatsoever. And actually we need to ask those powerful questions to draw that out.
I agree, and you could lose really good people if you don't. We opened up a few new care homes over the last few months, and we had a wonderful deputy appointed to work in one of our homes, and this was pre-open. She went missing. We couldn't get hold of her, and I was really worried because we couldn't get hold of her, and we sent somebody to her house and there was no answer. And anyway, long story short, her mom had had a stroke, and it took a few days. I ended up texting her myself saying, look, I'm just really worried about you. Let me know what's going on. I just need to know you're okay. Whatever is going on, whatever's happened, just let me know. You're not answering your phone and we're just worried about how you are. And what she said was, where she'd worked before, because she didn't turn up, obviously she didn't turn up for work and didn't tell anybody because she was in a panic about her mummy. And she just assumed we'd bin her. She just assumed that we wouldn't want to hear why she didn't turn up and why she didn't call. And actually she's brilliant, that woman. Honest to God, she's so lovely. She's hilarious too. And like, her mom is actually doing well now. She's okay and she's back at work. But ask the question, you know, and don't assume that somebody doesn't care. Don't assume that, you know, they just didn't bother to ring in sick. If somebody goes missing in your team, we're meant to be looking after each other. We need to ask the questions.
Go ahead. Yeah, just to add to that, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, we need to develop this open culture where actually our team members feel able to come to us and have these open discussions. Quite frankly, a lot of these sorts of discussions we have, they can be highly personal.
Yes.
Particularly if it's things around life events or health issues. So as an employer, we need to be sending out regular messages to our teams that say, actually, your health, your well-being matters to us, whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether you're struggling, whether you're not. And we all fall at different times throughout our lives for different reasons. But we're here to support you and listen without the fear of,
judgment or reprimand or that.
And there is obviously a balance with this, where you have to manage that persistent short-term absence.
Exactly.
But if you really start thinking slightly differently about absence, engaging some of those powerful questions, having open and honest conversations, showing vulnerability yourself, I think it could be really positive.
It's everything. Go ahead, Ruth.
Just a thought around the conversations, and I guess for me, the conversations about well-being should begin before someone is ever off sick.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we've done as part of our quarterly one-to-one process is we have inserted questions in there around people's well-being. Are there any stresses they're facing at the moment? Is there any support that is needed? But also what we're trying to do is arm all of our staff with the confidence to ask questions of their colleagues when they feel things aren't right, because sometimes people just don't know what to say and they don't want to feel like they're prying. But actually we've put together a little pocket-sized booklet with example questions and prompts and ways of beginning those conversations in a way that can feel a bit more comfortable to anyone. And the other thing I should point out, because this is a really good free resource, is that I was in Timpson's getting my shoes rehealed recently. Timpson's do a lot of work around supporting the mental health of their staff, but they also do a lot more generally around, you know, supporting their customers. And they've got these really lovely free guides in their shops that you could take. And if you're looking for some ideas and prompts for your own service, ideas around meetings and generating conversation, you could definitely do worse than picking up one of their guides.
I love Timpson's. I love that. Honestly, they've even got houses for their team members to go on holiday. It's amazing. It's interesting, isn't it? We can learn from all different sectors, and that's the beauty of this, isn't it? We can take in things from all different sectors and learn. I just want to go back to those difficult conversations, because I think the truth is that a lot of people are scared of HR. I'm saying that to you, Leah, as head of people.
Human remains is the worst I've ever been called. Human remains, I'm afraid.
Oh, mother of God, that's not good. Anyway, no, but really, people are scared to make a mistake, aren't they? They're scared because then actually if you end up in a tribunal, they'll kind of go, will that be used against me then? Did I do this? Did I do that? And that fear drives a culture of not asking actually the real questions. How would you give some people some tips here on how to do that without the fear of reprisal or ending up in a tribunal?
Yeah, it's unfortunately HR still has somewhat of a bad rep. So you may notice whilst on there I'm chief HR officer, I'm actually the chief people officer
people
now.
People is nice.
Trying to move away from the HR a little bit. It's a real consideration, I think. I go back to my point, there's very little you can do to make it worse or get yourself in a difficult situation. The things that you can do to get yourself in a bit of trouble if it were to go to an employment tribunal is not taking action, not making reasonable adjustments, discriminating, whether that's overtly or inadvertently. And most of those things come down to common sense. Now, there is an argument that common sense isn't that common. But when it comes to employment tribunals, the question that's often asked is, as an employer, have you acted reasonably?
Exactly.
That is subjective. Mm-hmm. However, if you feel you have acted reasonably, then don't be afraid of it. So have those conversations. It's better to have the conversation than not have the conversation. But have those things in the back of your mind. What things might I need to do as an employer to support this person?
Exactly.
Do we need to look at reasonable adjustments? That could be anything from reduced working hours to a phased return to work, It might be signposting, for example, even to external organisations. It could be a change in role for a short period of time. Ultimately, though, that's not entirely up to you. That's also a discussion with the individual. What matters and what does that person need? And those are the conversations that if an employment tribunal judge looks at, yeah. at what you've done, as long as you've acted reasonably in the circumstances, don't be afraid of having the conversations. You'd be really surprised that it's actually far more dangerous to not have a conversation than to have it.
I agree. In this home that I was telling you about earlier, when I met with the team, I said, what's the answer to this? Because every Friday and Saturday, especially at night, you'd think you had a whole team ready to work, and then all of a sudden, by Friday night, you had half a team ready to work, and it was like you'd be getting the calls and like, oh my god! And it's often it's often Friday and Saturday, sadly, or you know, New Year's Day or Easter or you know, all the usual ones. But actually, the team in this home, they were fuming. Because there's a certain amount of people that would always turn up, always be there, always do it, and come in and do extra shifts. But then I was worried, and they were worried about their well-being, because they're doing more shifts than they should do. And it's a really, really, really bad situation. It can break a home very, very quickly. So one of the team said, okay, what we need to do is X and X people, she said, they always ring in when they're on a weekend. And then they always know we need them to pick up a shift on a Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. So we need to ban people picking up shifts if they've rung in sick. And I said, okay, so how will we do that? And they said, there needs to be a moratorium. You can't pick up extra shifts if you've been off sick in the last 4 weeks. And I said, oh, really? Okay. And they said, well, anyway, they need to recover from their sickness, so they shouldn't be doing extra shifts in those 4 weeks. So, but it's really interesting. That cut down a lot of sickness in that home very, very quickly, because that was actually what was happening, was people were picking and choosing when they were going to work, and not being able to pick up extra shifts and make up the money prevented that. And it was the team that came up with it. It wasn't me at all. And I suppose that's the answer. We keep saying it, but the answer is in the team, isn't it? They normally know more than we do what to do, really, don't they?
Yes, Sanjay?
Sorry, a genuine question here. What, as a small operator, and the one thing I know is that tribunals listen to people differently compared to, you know, if you're a huge company versus a lone single care home. What is it? Owner-operator, there we go, sorry. What do you do when you've got requests coming in from teams? Like, say, right now, you know, people are like, oh, I want a standing desk. Oh, I want this. Oh, I want that. And everyone wants everything. However, there's only so much resource that I have. So what's the line, and how do I make my environment comfortable and listen to the team, and I'm responsive to them because that's part of my values? But also understand maybe the need for new equipment and stuff like this.
Reasonable adjustments, Leah. Back to people, officer.
Absolutely. So I think the first most important thing is everybody has a right to make those requests.
Yeah.
You know, we need to recognise that, and we need to make sure that we've got the right processes in place. We have to consider all of those requests. And it's about, that again, that discussion with that team member. Why do they feel that they need it? Actually, is it the right thing? Is there something else that's available? Is it more about, for example, the environment? Or actually, is there something behind that? For example, they aren't taking their breaks because they've got such a workload, and therefore, you know, they're becoming more and more tired. So sometimes those discussions and getting down into the depth of the detail is really important. Reasonable adjustments are just that, reasonable. Just because somebody has requested something doesn't mean that you have to do it as an employer. What you're responsible for doing is assessing that request objectively, and then determining if it's reasonable or not. If you think it's not reasonable, then you need to be prepared to stand up and really put your case forward as to why it's not reasonable. The other thing I'd say is that there are a lot of external organisations out there that can support with this, including grants, including funding, and I'd certainly, you know, absolutely encourage people to look at those things as well. But reasonable adjustments, they cover everything. So we tend to think about things like, and I don't know if everybody's the same, but the majority of reasonable adjustments we get is not working Saturday and Sundays for whatever reason. Uh-huh. But actually, when you think about it, reasonable adjustments can mean anything. If you're left-handed and you use a right-handed pair of scissors, you're at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
And having a left-handed pair of scissors is a reasonable adjustment. So sometimes it's not just about the real big things, the equipment, the working hours. Sometimes it can be little tweaks that actually just make things easier for your staff team and for individuals.
I agree, and some of it's down to like computer software for people, you know, on different areas of the spectrum or dyslexia. There's lots of different things that we can do. Rob, can you mind just getting the mic to Rob quick? Rob, can you just quickly tell us from the report today what the sickness stats are for social care?
Skills for Care have produced today, some of you may have seen this already, our state of report. And there's the numbers are pretty good, actually. It might sound quite a lot. I mean, there's 5.9 days a year average sickness in our sector. Now, across all sectors in England, there's 5.7 days. So it's not as if social care is in a particularly bad position. So I think we're doing pretty well. But it does amount to 8.1 million days lost productivity a year. So it's still a significant impact on employers. Significantly higher numbers within local authority care, basically. I think the care worker absenteeism in that is average of 15 days a year. So massive amount higher. And then if you look at the personal assistant role, which of course, you know, a lot of regulated care, you know, isn't covered by, the average is 2 days a year. So very different in the personal assistant sort of position. But what I think it means is that I think a lot of the challenges that many of us will have is convincing our boards and our finance directors or whoever, we need to invest in getting this right and getting this better, because look at the cost that we can save if we support people properly through these processes, and we can reduce absenteeism that way.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Rob. Ruth, back to you. So there's a couple of things. Team member wellbeing rooms and team rooms, we wanted to talk about that. And then can you just go on to talk about something that we all, you know, really support, which is supporting people in menopause? So if you could just start on the team rooms, please.
Yeah, one of the things that we've been looking at as an organisation is making sure that those people who work for us have actually got a relaxing space to be in that precious time when they're not on the floor. So obviously in a care home environment, you know, that is quite critical for people to have that break place. One of the things that we found most effective is actually going to those people who work for us and asking them what's important to them in that space. And recently I had a request from a home management team saying, we want the staff room completely refurbished. Staff don't like the furniture. And I thought, well, that's funny, because it's not that old. So I went into the staff room and talked to the staff who were on their break. And they're like, oh no, the furniture's fine. It's just, we'd really like some cushions to go on those chairs, and could we have a feature wall? And it would just be, not, you know, it wasn't a redo of the whole staff room. It didn't need to be as expensive as that, but actually just talking to those people and being there and having a look around the staff room with them and seeing that they needed an extra fridge, those kind of things were really important. So that was really a good, helpful exercise, just, you know, talk to them about what they would actually like to see. Do they want a toasty maker? Do they need a new kettle? Those little things that can just make people a bit more comfortable. And then just talking about menopause, I've had a team member recently who sort of put up her hand and said, I know that we're looking at developing a menopause strategy for the company, and I'd really like to take a leading role in doing this, because I've had a real struggle in the last 12 months managing menopausal symptoms, and I feel I've got a really good insight. And, you know, she's done a brilliant thing. She's emailed out to put people and said, would anyone else like to join me as we help develop this? And I'm going to be going out and talking to team members across the homes to see what people can input, because there are example strategies, policies out there, but you need to find what's going to be right for your service, because it's not tailored to social care and the particular things that we might find and might be issues with uniforms or managing breaks. It's very hard when you're, you know, looking after vulnerable individuals. So I think, as Sam, you often say, the answers are within. So let's not feel like it's always got to be us designing those policies and delivering them. Let's empower other people.
I love that. One takeaway for people to think about, Leah.
I'd say think about what can each of us do to encourage our employees to take that ownership of their health and well-being, but also support their colleagues, so it's not always top down. And to your point, asking questions, find out from individuals actually what would genuinely help them. Sometimes it's not what we think it might be.
Cool, thank you. Ruth?
I think for me it's about kindness and fairness, and if your policies convey that, and if you're conveying that as managers and leaders, and you're applying things fairly to people and looking at reasonable adjustments, you know, we're not going to the ends of the earth to please people, we will find the solutions, and staff sickness can absolutely be improved. People can be better supported where they need to be, and we can stamp out those duvet days that can be so destructive to our services.
Love it. And my one would be that social care is a challenge every day, but actually most people want to come to work, want to do a good job. So if that's not happening in our services, I can't hold on. So my dad used to always say, if you're going to point your finger, watch where this other finger's pointing. We need to look at what we're creating in our services to create the culture that we're living. So look right back at us, I would say, as leaders. That would be my takeaway. Does anybody have any questions? I know we've only got half a minute left.
Just following on from Leah's point before about funding, we've recently looked at this, at supporting a staff member to return to work, and the access to work, I'm sure it's called, through DWP. There's phenomenal budgets out there that can help, like you say, with adjustments, with riser desks, and I'm sure per person it's something like £70,000 a year that one individual can actually claim. So look at that in terms of your local DWP.
I know everybody's literally getting on that website right now. Is there anything else from anyone else? Well, listen, thank you all. I hope that was helpful. We'll talk to you soon.
The Outstanding Society is a community interest company, and membership is free to all, not just those who have achieved an outstanding rating. If you would like to join, please visit our website or follow the links in this episode.